Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta. Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
Hello, 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 up and down the Cusco. I'm also shouting out to the Yukon and the coast. Grady Deaton here, Coffee at KYUK, as usual, excited, and as usual, sharing my excitement with you. On Coffee at KYUK today, Alaska State Senator Donnie Olson talks with KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur about his legislative priorities this session. Olson represents Alaska's largest Senate district, which includes the lower Yukon River area. He begins talking about his position on rural access to real ID services.
I have been quite vocal because people in my district do not have access to a DMV, do not have access to some of the niceties that many people that live in the metropolitan part of Alaska that have a road system can go on down there and see what they need, because many people do not have an original birth certificate, do not have an original social security card, and so it puts them at a disadvantage if they can't find something. Because let's say, for example, some elderly person from Tuxuk Bay gets medevaced into Anchorage, and they get over their traumatic medical experience, and then they're trying to get back home. They're going to have to go back home on a jet, and if they don't have a real ID, TSA is going to stop them right there and says, you don't have a real ID, and you don't have anything else to go ahead and have an identification ID card that we can sanctify, that we'll use to validate who you are. We're not going to accept you on there. And so that's one of the things that has caught my attention, and the people in my district and people outside of my district that I see in the terminals have been bringing to my attention that how are we going to comply with this, because we can't find our cards. We don't know how to get an original. And even if they do think they have something, there's a number of other issues that come up, like physical addresses that they have in their communities. These people sometimes, you live on a riverbank, you live on a trail, a road or something that's there that doesn't have any identifying numbers and names. They don't have physical addresses, and not only do you have to have that physical address, you have to show that it's been valid for within the last 90 days. And so it's those kind of issues that I have brought up and thought that we need a longer period of time than October 1st, because as we get into the springtime, get into the summertime, people are going to be busy fishing and hunting, getting ready for trying to provide for themselves during the winter. And so because of that, I was actually offended when I heard that the commissioner was trying to ask for donations from people out here, or putting the burden on the native corporations that it's not their duty to go ahead and fund some of these governmental mandates. The government mandated them, let them fund them. And that's where I was coming from. And in my 20 years I've been in the Senate, I've never heard of a government official asking for private donations so that they can fund their travel out to rural Alaska. If the government mandates it, they ought to pay for it, or at least pay a portion of it so that it can be affordable.
So the solution you propose is to extend the deadline. Is there anything else you would propose as a solution?
Absolutely. What happens is that extending the deadline just gives us more time, and we've been extended in the past, to be honest with you. But because the administration, especially the Department of Motor Vehicles, which is a part of underneath the governor, has not come up with a plan on how they're going to deal with this real ID, I said to Governor Dunleavy, why don't you go ahead and use your special relationship with President Trump to go ahead and get this extension, so you and your Department of Motor Vehicles can go ahead and put a plan in place to make it so that people in rural Alaska have a fair shake of being able to get their real ID. Because people, let's face it, people in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau, they have roads that they can go to. We do not have roads out there to get back home, or to go to our hospital appointment, or go to funerals or things like that. We have to fly. And because of that, I think that it's justified in asking for an extension until they can get, I think it's going to take 1 to 2 years for the Department of Motor Vehicles to go ahead and get themselves up to speed so they can have a plan to get real ID out to people in Tutuliak or someplace like that.
Moving on to the state budget, Governor Dunleavy's proposed budget contains a large draw from the Constitutional Budget Reserve to fund the state government, but the legislature is being advised that reducing the reserve to less than $200 million would put the state at risk. Is the governor's plan realistic?
No, it's absolutely not realistic. If you take all the money out of the governor, out of the Constitutional Budget Reserve, he's just going to use it during this first period of budget. What are they going to do and that's for FY21. What are they going to do for FY22? You've left nothing in there to go ahead and, nothing in your savings account to go ahead and, pay for government after that. He's just trying to get from year to year, which is not a long term. He's talking about a 5 or 10 year plan on occasion. And what I'm saying, no, you need a 1 year plan to show how you're going to have revenues after you run the Constitutional Budget Reserve out of money. Where are you going to get your revenues from? And he seems to be blinded to that question, blinded to what the answers might be, because it goes against what some of his backers are telling him not to go ahead and do.
Well, an alternative is raising revenue, and Governor Dunleavy wants Alaskans to vote on any new taxes. What do you think of that?
The governor's idea that people are going to vote on some of these large ticket items is partly because he knows he can't get them through the legislature. So if the people vote on it, the issue that I have is that people elected the legislature to come down here and deal with this stuff. They elected the governor to go ahead and come up with answers on how you're going to get revenues and not just give it to the people. The people don't know necessarily all the intricacies of what the oil tax credits are, how much the oil tax credits are owed by the state of Alaska. And because of that, I think he's passing it off and adding confusion to something that is very, very serious, because the train is driving over the cliff here, and he's going to use the last of our savings account, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, to go ahead and try and balance it. And here's what's going to happen is what I see is once the Constitutional Budget Reserve is gone, and there's no money out there to go ahead and for him to tap into, no other savings, he's going to start taking things out of other accounts that are available to him. Number one, the power cost equalization, which has almost $1 billion in it. And because of that, he's going to take that money, which was intended to go ahead and take the edge off of some of the high prices of electricity out in rural Alaska, because they'd already built a number of multi-million dollar dams to go ahead and make sure that people down in southern Alaska, southeast Alaska, had hydropower, as well as around Anchorage. And Anchorage already has almost a natural gas with prices so low that it's the cheapest place to live in Alaska is Anchorage, because of their access to such cheap natural gas. It's almost free.
Senator Lyman Hoffman wants to make power cost equalization a non-sweepable area of the budget. What do you think of that?
I think that the idea that you have a sweepable power cost equalization fund is not what the legislature that put the power cost equalization endowment into law had intended. They had put that money together so that we can get the endowment, get the interest off it to go ahead and pay for electricities in rural Alaska, where we are already paying a high price just to keep our lights on, just to keep our refrigerator cooled, just to keep a light on in the refrigerator. I mean, they're almost like, when I was first down here, they were attacking it, and pulling the funding off of it. It was almost like they wanted us to unscrew the light in our refrigerator, so it was because it was burning too much electricity. And so I totally and wholeheartedly back and am in support of what Senator Hoffman has in mind about making it non-sweepable. And I think that was what the opinion of the attorney generals until we had this one here, who has a history of having his opinions reversed, has come up with it. He thought it was sweepable.
The budget we've been talking about, it is the massive issue on the table as it's been in the last few years. How do you balance this massive issue?
Well, I think we do need a cut. There are places that could be cut. I think there are some programs that are a little too big for some of the budget that we've got going on. But that doesn't mean we have to go ahead and cut everything, because no matter how much you cut, you'll never have enough to go ahead and balance the budget. We have a $1.5 billion deficit. $1.5 billion, that's a lot of money out there. And you can't, by cutting all the programs, you can't allow that, you can't cut yourself into prosperity. And so there's no doubt that you've got to have revenues. When I see what I see with this administration, with Governor Dunleavy in particular, and the people that have surrounded him, is that he does not have a plan to go ahead and increase the revenues. He'll just say, well, we'll start taking funds, we'll start taking out of the CBR, we'll start going and take it out of the higher education funds, which only has $400 million in it. He will start taking out of power cost equalization. There's no plans to raise revenue, and so because of that, I find him and his advisors short-sighted and almost on the point of being incompetent to be in the position that they're in, faced with the difficult issues that we have in front of us.
And where do you cut first? And alternatively, where do you tax first to raise that revenue?
Well, I think one of the things I do agree on is that, to a certain degree, many people in my district do not benefit from the marine highway system. And although I see people down here that certainly are dependent upon it, but the idea that you have these ferries running around that are half empty all the time, especially during the winter months, I could see that there could be more efficiencies with that. And the Department of Transportation commissioner has agreed with that. There can be more transportation, but the idea that the governor's going to mothball everything is not realistic. As far as revenues go, when we start looking at some of the oil tax credits that we owe millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to some of these oil companies, without having an adjustment to that, which we can adjust with statute, we could get those tax credits. And I understand that the tax credits were put in place a long time ago to try and enhance some of the exploration on the North Slope, but that exploration is now over. It's time for us to have our time to adjust those tax credits to make sure we, as the state, which are broke and going broke, don't go outright bankrupt, because what will happen is that the ability for us to borrow money with geo bonds is going to be at a much higher rate than we did otherwise. Because when Dunleavy first got into office here, had a AAA rating. Now we're down to a B rating or B1 rating. It's we've gotten down significantly. But there are other revenues that can be out there. There's been the proposal for a statewide sales tax, which would get everybody that's buying things from up here. But I come from the small town of Golovin, and in Golovin, you know, when you're dealing with any kind of revenues for a small municipality, you want to go ahead and make sure they're protected. Otherwise, they can't keep the doors open for the offices and the office building, or the offices that they're overseeing the necessary services there in the small community. And so I'm not sure that I'm totally behind it, but it can be looked at to see what can be done. There's an income tax. Many of us that are of the age of when we had a $10 head tax for schools, remember that, and then remember some of the income tax was obliterated or was voted out back in the early 1980s, and that's certainly an option that's out there, more because we see a number of people that are making six-digit numbers, $500,000-$600,000, that don't pay a cent of taxes, don't pay a cent to pay for our roads, don't pay a cent to pay for our airports, don't pay a cent for our hospital system that is somewhat dependent on the revenues or the state for some of their services.
And tribal education compacting with the state, this is a new issue. It's an issue that many people, including lawmakers, are still starting to wrap their heads around to understand. What are your thoughts on the bill that Governor Dunleavy has proposed for tribal education compacting with the state? Thoughts you have or questions that you, as a lawmaker, have about it?
I wish I could say that I'm an expert on it, but I'm not on tribal education compacting. I know that people have been have benefited from tribal colleges, like they're trying to get one out there up in Barrow to Ilisavik. I know that out in Fort Lewis in Colorado, that's a tribal college. And so when you have free tuition, it makes it much more affordable for students that don't come from a wealthy family, don't come from a family that has much disposable income, are able to go out and get a college education so they can come on back, and hopefully they'll come on back and serve our people, because we need more educated people. We need more people that are experts in this and that, that are in some of these, some of the, as society gets more and more sophisticated and complex, we need people that can stand up, step up to the plate, run our village governments, run our native corporations, and not have to rely on outside personnel to go ahead and take care of them. As far as what's going on in the governor's bill, I haven't studied that real closely because it's not been heard in the Senate, and certainly hasn't been heard in finance. I know that there has been a hearing on the House on it, but I haven't kept up with what the action is going to be on it.
Public safety is a top issue in the state. It's a top issue in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. There is a working group based on the Village Public Safety Officer Program. Are there any changes that you would want made to that program?
Yes, Representative Chuck Kopp and myself were co-chairman of the public safety working group, especially addressing some of the VPSO's issues that are out there. And 10 years ago, I was the chairman of the VPSO task force that went around to a number of villages, actually went out to them to go ahead and get input on what we had there. And there were 9 recommendations that came out of the working group. The main problem that I'm finding is that the issue with retention and recruitment has been that some of the nonprofits, as well as the one borough that has taken over the VPSO program in their area, have been essentially strangled by not being able to have access to the funds that we had, as the legislature had made available to them. Department of Public Safety were holding on to them with almost unrealistic criteria for them to access that money for recruitment and retention of some of the vehicles. For example, one vehicle that was out there needed some tires, and so when the request went into Public Safety to purchase some tires for that vehicle, they said, no, it's not necessary for that. Use the four-wheeler. I said, well, what about when in the wintertime, when it's cold and stormy? They said, well, we're still going to deny it. And so they denied it. And so because of that, there were 9 recommendations to go ahead and get around some of these issues of changes. There were not statutory changes, but the most significant one related to funding was that we pulled the money out of Department of Public Safety and put it into the Department of Commerce and have them dole out the money with much more objective criteria for some of these coordinators and the programs to go ahead and access the funding that is so rightly theirs. Because let's face it, in the villages, they are our first line of defense when we have somebody out there that is misbehaving, or if there's a search going on, if there's a fire happening, it's just much more efficient and it's safer for people to have this funded program be funded in a more noble manner.
And with this session, what are your top priorities?
Well, I'm on finance, and so usually financial things are my top priority. Right now, because of the drastic, very troublesome and hurtful things that the governor put forward last year with his cutting the budget, public broadcasting was amongst them. I am trying hard to go ahead and have that funding restored in a supplemental budget that's probably going to be pretty sizable compared to in years past. And so with that in mind, I plan on trying to work hard to keep those programs going because I think they're so essential to rural Alaska. And when we look at things like the other thing is to try and make it so that power cost equalization is non-sweepable in conjunction with Senator Hoffman. And so make sure some of these VPSO recommendations get put into place so that VPSOs can be more efficient, because those statutes were put into place, you know, almost 40 or 50 years ago in the early 80s. And so they need to be retuned and brought back up to the present times, where, because some of the VPSO requirements or some of the functions that they served did back then have changed to a certain degree. And a lot of it has turned toward law enforcement or some element of that, because we have more people out there misbehaving.
Senator Olson, anything else?
I just want to thank everybody for their support, and thank people that have supported Senator Hoffman as well, because we've been working very closely together for the last 20 years that I've been in the Senate, and he's been in the legislature for over 30 years. And so because of that, we have we're both on the Senate Finance Committee, so we have a good working relationship. And I want to go ahead and thank people for their support over the years, and especially this year, as we try to make sure that we maintain the lifestyle that so we have electricity, so that we have public safety, so we have education, so we have those necessary services that are out there that the state is mandated to give to people all over the state of Alaska on an equal basis as put out in the Constitution.
Senator Donnie Olson, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, and have a good day.
That was KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur talking with Alaska State Senator Donnie Olson. That's Coffee at KYUK, leaving me just one thing left to say, and that's don't forget to be awesome to each other. Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta.
Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
If you'd like to suggest a guest or arrange to be on with us yourself, contact us at coffee@kyuk.org or call 543-3131 today.